Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagno. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, free agency is well underway. The Lions have made a slew of moves. We're going to be talking about them all today. There's some other stuff has occurred that's affecting the roster, and we're going to talk about that as well.
Certainly.
We took a long break, you know, not surprising for us in the offseason. This is our new thing. Now we take long vacations.
Oh man, the kids, it's the kids. Now that my kids are getting older, they just occupy so much of my time. You know what I mean? Like, so I'll take the blame because I can't, it's tough for us to mesh our schedules with full-time jobs. And like I said, as my kids get older, they demand a lot more travel time and extra activities. And it's, so, yeah, I apologize. I know people have been waiting for us to get back and discuss everything. But, hey, let's take a big overview of the roster, and I think it will hopefully satisfy everyone's, you know, desires.
All right. That's enough complaining about being an adult today. Let's move on to the roster. Let's start with the quarterback position. As always, that's how we do it. No moves made. Jared Goff, Hendon Hooker, those are the two incumbents still on the roster. Nobody's been added. Obviously, neither of those two guys were subtracted.
Yeah, so, you know, Goff's extension is still in the works. We don't know anything about that.
Is it? I know we hear more about it. Is it actually happening?
Well, it's in discussions. You know what I mean? I mean, like, I can't tell you about the progress. This front office is very tight-lipped. We don't get a lot of leaks out of it. And so we know that they're talking. We just don't know the extent or how far along or exactly where they're at. We just know that it's talks are continuing. Beyond that, well, I don't know. I think they try and maximize everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they didn't add another quarterback yet, I think, is really a hat tip to Hendon Hooker as QB2, which is basically what we've talked about, and that's what our expectations have been. So I still think a veteran addition at some point makes some sense, but there's absolutely no rush on it. And that signing could come, you know, anytime in the next several months, not necessarily not this. I don't think it's a several week type of thing.
It's plenty of time.
Yeah. If the right guy comes along, they can make the addition. It's not like previous years where they've been like, hey, we got to get a guy who can be a competent backup. I think they're confident in Hendon. So they're comfortable where they are with the QB1 and 2. And they'll just take things as they come with quarterback.
And just to clarify, when you say veteran quarterback, you mean NFL veteran, not a 6 or 7 year college starter like Bo Nix or Michael Penix.
Yeah, no, I don't expect them to spend in the draft. If they do, it'd be late day three pick, type of thing. I they're going to want bodies for training camp, so you know these moves will need to get done before training camp, but. Again, not a pressing need.
All right, running back position. One move was made. It wasn't a big going out and getting a free agent. It is tendering a exclusive rights free agent deal or tender. It's called a tender, right?
Yeah.
To Craig Reynolds. So Craig Reynolds, in all likelihood, will be back. Somebody would have to really pay up for his services, right, to pry him away.
Well, actually... They can't with an ERFA, right?
Okay. Like just restricted free agency.
Correct. So Craig's going to be back. I mean, there's really little doubt about that. Zonovan Knight also returned, but I think we talked about that last time. And so they returned their entire running backs room, and that has, you know, caused no movement. They haven't had a need to add outside of it. Draft would only be, hey, can we get an upgrade out of it type of thing? But other than that, it's as expected, nothing really going on other than retention.
That would be interesting if they drafted a running back in like the fourth round. Well, do they have a fourth round pick anymore?
No, they'd have to do a fifth. Yeah.
They have to do it in the fifth. So like it would, I don't know, fifth wouldn't be that as big of a deal because it's just, you're adding bodies. Fifth round's going to be, well, he's going to play special teams, that type of thing. And we'll see what we got with him. Jason Kabinda still not re-signed, and he's not anywhere else either. It's worth mentioning.
Yeah, I kind of expect that to stay that way for a while.
All right, all right. Wide receiver group. There's a couple small moves, right? Bringing back Donovan Peoples-Jones, who's I don't think they brought him back when,
One
last time
year.
we were on.
Yeah,
Well, yeah,
correct.
but
Yep.
when
Just
he still
happened.
wasn't signed at that time, and then
Correct.
Tre'Quan Smith, right? Or has that one been done for a while? That's
I
not a
think
big
that,
move.
yeah, it's, I think it kind of might have flown under the radar. I don't think we've really talked about Tre'Quan, former third rounder from the Saints, I believe.
Well, he's got to be from the state. That's where they're getting all these guys from.
Right. I know he played for the Saints at one point. That's how he, there's some familiarity there. But yeah, no, the big move was Peoples-Jones, adding him back. At worst, you know, he's wide receiver five. At best, he's wide receiver three and starting at the X. But I don't know if that's really their intention with him. I think he's a guy who's a depth player who they're going to give an opportunity to compete with an offseason, a full offseason to train and build some more chemistry with Jared Goff and the rest of the crew. It'll be interesting to see how his development goes because it's, you know, he's a talented player and there's a lot of upside there. It is as he gains familiarity, you know, we'll see where, you know, how high up the depth chart he can climb. I don't think he's penciled in as the starter. Okay. I, you know, I, are they going to bring Josh Reynolds back? Possibly. It's worth noting Josh Reynolds was in Baltimore on Friday. Didn't sign from what we've heard, or if he did, it hasn't been reported. So it looks like Josh Reynolds is still out there. And so there's always a possibility Reynolds comes back. You know, maybe he tested the waters to see what his value is. It's also a real good possibility they attack the draft at this position because there is a wealth of talent. Also, if you want to keep costs down at the wide receiver position because you're going to give an extension to St. Brown, it's not a bad idea to invest in a rookie wide receiver either. So this will be interesting to see how this plays out. Wide receiver market hasn't, you know, the contracts that have gone out have been pretty high, which is a bit surprising with a loaded class and potentially more loaded classes to come in the future as well. So wouldn't be surprising to see them sit and wait for the right guy. There's plenty of guys that fit that wide receiver X profile in the top, you know, 50, 60 picks. So they'll have a opportunity to add a guy who could come in and potentially start. At the same time, if you're giving Peoples-Jones an opportunity to start, they might be completely comfortable with that. Just, you know, adding one more guy. They may also add Reynolds back on a cheaper deal as the price goes down in as free agency wears on, and then maybe still add a guy in the draft, right? And so that starting X spot is really the only like glaring starting role. We'll talk about another potential starting role when we get to defense, but on there's they don't really have a starter at X or a guy who's capable beyond, you know, Peoples-Jones, and I don't think they have him pegged for that role at this time. So I would say this is the one like remaining starting role that's just kind of hanging out there.
Tre'Quan Smith played one game with the Denver Broncos last year. The previous 5 seasons he spent with the New Orleans Saints,
There you go.
started 35 games in his time with the Saints, 131 receptions and five. You know, he's a 2-3 target a game type of guy. You know, put up halfway decent numbers for probably being their fourth wide receiver. You know, like, so it'll be interesting to see how it goes with him if he makes any noise in training camp or if he's just another competitive body.
Right.
You mentioned Amon-Ra St. Brown and his extension. You talk about the tight lips of the front office. What about anything on the Amon-Ra St. Brown front?
No, it's the same situation as Goff, really, with all of these extensions. It's all, hey, we're talking to this guy, but that's the extent of really what we know. So, not a lot going on. Side note, did you see that he's going to be on that Netflix
Wide
show,
receiver,
right? Now,
or receiver, I think they call
yeah, we talked about that previously because we talked about the fact that NFL cameras were in the Lions locker room all the time and following him around, and
Oh,
it's
so
the
it's all
same.
already in the can.
Oh yeah, it was from last season.
Oh, okay.
So it'll be interesting because the other two guys that they were following, you know, the other guys that they were following around are kind of big name guys, including Justin Jefferson of the Vikings. So there'll be two games where those St. Brown and Jefferson played each other that they may be able to highlight. There'll also be the NFC Championship game because they were focusing on Debo and Kittle from San Fran. So that'll be a nice culmination probably to their series on with half of the guys they're following playing in the NFC Championship game. But yeah, it's it was the same production crew, this and a lot of the same videographers that were here with Hard Knocks. So like it was interesting that when the first time that we like they came on our radar, I like was having flashbacks. I was like, this is the same exact people that were here for Hard Knocks a year ago. Mm-hmm. Like, what are they doing here? And it took us a little while. And then, you know, eventually we kind of figured it out. But yeah, now it's official. Should be here over the summer. I think when they did quarterback, I think that was released in like July. So maybe same time frame. They got a few more guys to follow. So I don't know if that helps with more material to like, you know, fill the hour long, you know, episodes, or if that actually makes it harder because they have more film to pour through. So I don't know. We'll see. Maybe July. That would be fun.
What will next year's show be? Will it be tackle?
Long snap.
And that would be cool. Now, you know, we might joke about that, but that probably would be a pretty entertaining show. They'd find a way. Like, you'd have to follow like 8 long snappers though, because there's just not enough action. And then you know, how goofy the job is. Like, yeah, you just fire the ball between your legs, and it's a skill. You know, it's not anybody on this team can do this. We draft a guy who's pretty unathletic for the most part, and that's all he does is snap the ball between his legs, because it's hard to do.
I think I wouldn't be surprising to see them go defense next year, because they've done two high profile.
Probably be cornerback because they have the best personalities.
They do have a lot of personalities, lots of confidence, and that makes for good television.
Right. All right. Tight end. Not much movement here either. I believe Brock Wright already had the restricted free agent tender at the time of our last podcast. Laporta now, returns, Mitchell returns, Zylstra returns. All right, go ahead.
No, I apologize. I was getting jumpy getting excited to talk about Wright. He hasn't signed that tender yet. So it's
maybe
possible.
Maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible that he is fielding other offers, because as a restricted free agent, he has that opportunity. Exclusive rights, you don't get the opportunity to look around, but as a restricted free agent, you get the opportunity to you know, see if other teams are interested in your services and potentially get a contract. Because the Lions tendered him, they would be eligible for compensation if another team signed him. If Brock Wright was drafted, the problem is Brock Wright was undrafted. So if another team does sign Brock, the Lions get a chance to match the contract. If they don't match the contract, they don't get compensation because Brock Wright was an undrafted free agent. So they could potentially lose him. Now, a tender is kind of a big deal. You don't see them happen that often. There's only, I think, only like 7 of them happened this year. The reason is because it's up to like $3 million now. So like you're paying $3 million to get tight end 2 back on the roster. And that's fine, especially because you have a rookie as your starter. And I don't know. I'd be interested to see if Brock Wright gets another offer bigger than that, or maybe he'll be looking for some more stability. Maybe he wants a multi-year deal, but he has that opportunity to search out, you know, better offers. So we'll see. He hasn't signed anything yet. Could be that he's just out of town and hasn't signed it too. You know what I mean? Remember, he's recovering from a broken forearm. So he may be just taking his time, but I do think he'll end up back in Detroit. That's my gut feeling, but there's a slim chance he doesn't.
Is a restricted tender, is that guaranteed? Do you get like all $3 million if you sign it?
No. That's the tricky part. None of it is guaranteed. So like if he
and the NFL figured it out.
Yeah. So if he signs that with Detroit and then doesn't make the roster, he gets nothing.
Or whatever he's made in the how many weeks of training camp or whatever.
Correct. Yeah. So he it would be in his best interest to try and negotiate a new contract with Detroit to try and get some guarantees. It would, that's also why he may look and say, hey, can, is someone else out there going to be willing to give me an offer? And then if I want to stay in Detroit, I'll you know, I'm going to, they still have the opportunity to match. So from a player standpoint, trying to add some security, he'd be good. It'd be a good idea to get some guarantees in there. At the same time, $3 million is not bad. And I think he's in a pretty good spot to make the roster. That. Right. Yep. Yeah. And he's, right. I mean, yeah. He's tight end too. They love him. So I think he ends
up. And he's useful.
Yes.
He might be our best backup tight end ever, at least in our lifetimes.
And they have a play that they run with him that works every time for like 40 yards. So, you know, with that faint block leak out that they do, it works every time.
You know what? I'm switching my favorite backup tight end for the Lions. It might be Pete Kerplevich. Although he did Brock Wright has much better numbers than Pete Kerplevich. I just looked it up. He only played 3 years with the Lions. I know it's a local guy. That's probably why he sticks out in my mind as far as backup tight ends go. And Sloan was a backup, right, to Rodney Holman at first. But
then he took over
long-term as a starter. Yeah. Anyhow, that's neither here nor there. All right. Offensive tackle. Dan Skipper has come back. So that's one guy back in the fold. Matt Nelson went to the New York Giants. Gone.
There you go.
So it's just Decker, Sewell, Skipper, Connor Galvin. Those are the four tackles on the roster.
And that's fine for now, but it definitely, you know, is a good indicator that they this is a position they're going to need to address. There's no rush because the guys that are out there in free agency are either going to demand a higher amount of money than what I believe they're willing to pay. At the same time, it could be a position they draft as early as like the second or third round, in my opinion, especially with Decker being in a contract year. So low key draft need that I think they could go high. At the same time, I don't think it's a pressing need in free agency where you're going to be looking to add. And the reason I say it's not a pressing need in free agency compared to the draft is because of how the Lions structure free agent contracts, right? If you're a starter, they're going to give you like a 3-year deal with two of those years, high guarantees in the first 2 years with the option to kick it in the third. If you're not a starter or a borderline starter, you typically might get a 1 or 2 year deal. But that 2 year deal, again, is typically front row loaded where it only guarantees that first year. So to add a guy in free agency to be a potential long-term solution that isn't a starter, it doesn't fit how their approach to how they attack free agency, right? So they're more apt to want to add a tight end, or I'm sorry, a offensive tackle in the draft that they can have security over his contract for multiple years as a potential long-term starter. And if you want a guy who's going to be a long-term starter, you got to probably spend a higher pick. As opposed to then, you know, I don't want to, as opposed to like how they would attack that guy in free agency, right? So like in my mind, when you look at how they draft, when you look at how they attack free agency, the contracts that they give, if they're worried Decker's going to leave, then they're going to probably draft an offensive tackle or a player who can play offensive tackle earlier than I think most would expect.
Yeah, and that maybe that gets to what we were talking about last week with the guys with the guard tackle availability or ability, right?
Mm-hmm.
And especially with the move they made at guard, which I thought was a little bit surprising because I thought they're going to go first round. They're going to get a guard right away, and they still might. You know, there's nothing keeping them from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an interesting development. Back to Kerplevich for a second. And this is like what getting old, you know, does to you. Because he sticks out more in my mind because of like Madden 97 and Madden 99. I was probably using him all the time in 12 personnel, you know, and I thought, oh, this guy probably caught 30 balls a year in those years. But it's like, no, he caught like 10 balls total in those 3 years. It's like, it's you. You did it on your Nintendo 64. You know, like this is how bad it's gotten, you know, losing your mind. Now it's just anybody who's young out there listening, like this is the nightmare you have to look forward to. Anyhow, guard position.
Yeah.
Right? Big addition. So here's one of the big free agency addition. We'll talk about guard and center. Glasgow returns. Ragnow returns. Coyote Awashika got the exclusive yes. rights tender. Yeah. Matt Farniok's on the roster. Colby Sorsdahl, of course, from last year. Natane Muti, all guys under contract. The big free agent signing, Kevin Zeitler.
Mm. Zeitler is 34. And
on
I think
the wrong
that's,
side of 30.
Right. And I think that's why, and he signed a one-year deal, I believe.
Which is good. I like really, the one-year deal.
Yeah, they haven't released all the numbers on him yet. But 34 years old, one-year deal, I think very much keeps guard in play for the Lions, including the first round. But Zeitler's still playing at a high level. Like, he really hasn't dropped off. But we talk about this all the time. Once you get over 30, the moment your game falls off the table could come at any time, right? It's just you have to have backup plans for that. And so with Zeitler, he's been playing at a high level. He's coming from a Ravens system that offers similar blocking tendencies, pulling guards, power moves, stuff like that. And that is exactly with what the Lions do. So he's going to fit perfect. And what we're going to see is he's played right guard his whole career. And so we're going to see Graham shift over to the left side, right? Now, Graham played left guard for 2 years. And I think he played a little bit last year and like some spot duty for Jonah. But Graham's completely comfortable. Guard center, either guard spot and center, Graham can do it all. And that's one of the reasons Graham is so valuable. That's a big reason why they brought him back. Very team-friendly deal, if we're being honest. But Zeitler is a guy who's going to be exactly what they want. You're going to put this, you know, big, massive guy who wins with a ton of power and is arguably one of the best pass blocking guards in the NFL right next to your two, right in between your two all pros. And so he's going to have an easy job, even at 34 years old, he's going to have an easy job. And they're going to be able to feature him in a lot of ways that that they maybe wanted to feature Vitae, right? Like that Vitae was this big, powerful guard that they could use, that they wanted to use it on the right side to help feature, you know, pair with Panay's power and Frank's agility. And Zeitler offers that. It's a very smart move. Like I said, we haven't seen the contract terms, but I don't think it even matters. Based on what he was, you know, going to covet, based on what the Lions have typically offered, it's going to be a reasonable deal. I'd be shocked if it wasn't.
It goes away. No matter what, it goes away in 1 year.
Right. And so I like the move. He was a top 15 guard. I think he was 15 or 16 ranked overall as amongst all the guards last year. So you end up now having two top 15 guards on your roster. You know, there's 64 starting guards in the NFL, right? And Lions are going to have two of the top 15. They have two of the top 15 tackles and
number
Frank
two.
Ragnow's
center.
The well, he's number, number one now. Center. Yeah, right. Number one. So it's a solid line. If anything,
that's where the team's built.
Yeah,
that's the superstar of this team, the strength of the team, the future of the team.
So you lose. See, what made Jonah great was his ability to be mobile, and Graham has that ability. And so by shifting Graham over to the left side, you keep that mobility on the left side, and on the right side, you lose some of that mobility. But that's a side that you want power on anyways, because you have that. You can get that mobility out of Panay. So like, it's. I don't want to say they got better, but they may have gotten better. Like there's no injury history with Zeitler. Yes, he's aging, but like he fits exactly what they want. Now there's an inherent risk with having 30 plus year old guards, which is why I think they need to invest at the guard position, especially for the long term. So for me, I would still expect the guard to come off the board for the Lions early. And if that guy can play guard tackle, that helps. And if he plays guard center, then that gives you insurance for, you know, Ragnow's potential injury history. Right. So like It's a lot of options they can go. But man, if they went, it would shock people. But if they went like wide receiver, guard, tackle,
everybody would be pleased.
It wouldn't shock me at all.
Not everybody would be pleased. Yeah, like the cornerback's got to fit in there somewhere.
Exactly. And I think I think people would be mad about that. But if the way that Brad Holmes drafts, he drafts for value, and those are potential long-term needs at all three of those positions. And I think all three of those positions are in play in the top 100 picks. Now, is he going to go offense, offense, offense? Probably not.
You never know.
Exactly. But that's exactly my point, is that you don't know, because he has positioned himself to just take the best guy, and he'll be comfortable with that.
What if it's a linebacker at 29? What if
that would shock me?
What if he did that? It'd be weird.
It would be. Unless
tackle.
Unless it's some linebacker that, if it was, he'd have to be some kind of hybrid. If he took a linebacker, a quarterback, or a running back, those would all shock me.
Pretty shocking.
Yeah. Everything or else, tight though. End. You know, the thing is,
even a tight end,
even a tight end wouldn't even shock me too much. I don't think it's a need, but at the same time, if they run 12 personnel, if they added a tight end two, that eliminates the need to add a big X receiver, right? Like, I don't think they're going to do it. I don't think this is the class to do it, but like, again, I could see the logic in them saying, this guy fits. He gives us a weapon. But I do think offensive line is going to be heavily addressed one way or another. Lots of draft capital going into the offensive line if I had my way.
Okay. This is kind of an offshoot of what you were just saying. Brad Holmes has built up a lot of good faith in you, right? Over the last 3 years. Like you're okay with almost anything he drafts. What if he drafted a kicker in the first round? Would you be done with him? Would it be over? Be like, all right, that's it. We're done with this guy. We've got to fire him.
It'd be pretty close.
It's an interesting question. Because it's like, he's great GM, but look what he just did. He just drafted a kicker in the first round. Time to let him go.
That would be somebody else. That would be something. That would
be shocking.
It would be.
A draft in Detroit. Taking the kicker in the first round. I don't know.
Yeah.
A dumb thing that popped in my head.
I don't think I have confidence that's not going to.
Well, of course it's not going to happen.
I don't think the ghost of Al Davis is going to show up and try and grab Janikowski here.
That was great. It's too bad. Nothing, like, because you make a good point. Nobody's ever going to do that again. No. I mean, I guess never say never, but like, it's probably never going to, at least we got to see it. Like how, like a royally stupid move. Anyhow. You did mention Glasgow playing a little bit at left guard last year. I believe that was when like Jonah was hurt and they felt Sorsdahl was better off at right guard or more comfortable at right guard. Right.
Yeah.
And I believe it's Glasgow's first 2 years, Warford was the right guard, and then TJ Lang was the right guard, right? So, like, he was stuck playing left guard both of those years.
Yeah, Graham played, he played left guard, and then he played center. And then, remember, the first year they drafted Frank played left guard, and Graham played center in that first year.
Oh, okay.
And then they flipped him after that. Or then they I think that was year Graham went into the rotation. Jeez, a guard rotation was the stupidest thing. Because They ran a guard rotation so they didn't have to pay him, so they thought I could drive his value down, and it didn't work. Denver still paid him.
No, people are watching and know if they're good or not.
Yeah, it's so dumb. Anyway, that regime is gone. We don't have to worry about them anymore.
No, not for a while.
But you know, I think they're comfortable with Aushika and Sorsdahl. But I do think a guard has to be on the table. I wrote an article. So Pride of Detroit has this as a newsletter that they put out twice a week for subscribers. And this week Jeremy was on vacation, so he asked me to write an article for the newsletter. And the article that I wrote was about how to build and sustain an offensive line for the future, right? So what I did was I went and I looked at all of the different, like successful offensive lines, and then like how those offensive lines were like being currently built, right? So let me see if I can pull it up so I can, I'm making sure that I'm not speaking out of turn. Anyway, the gist of it is that all of these successful offensive lines, right? They're like, and if you look at like PFF's rankings, like the guys who all finished like in the top, you know, part of the offensive lines. So we're talking about like the Lions, the Eagles, Colts, Falcons, Ravens, like those offensive lines. They're all kind of built the same way. And essentially what it is they're investing a lot of money into like three players. And those three players typically end up like in the top seven of like a team's salary cap hits, right? Lions are the same way. They got three guys at the top that account for big money, right? Sewell, Decker, and Ragnow. And so the other two positions are typically filled one of two ways. Most of the time, it's filled with players on rookie contracts. So for the Lions last year, they had both Sewell and Jonah Jackson on rookie contracts. Technically, Sewell's still on his rookie contract this year,
yeah, it's
as well.
A higher number, yeah.
Right. But you either fill those, so you spend money on three, and then you fill the other two spots with guys on rookie contracts or aging veterans that don't cost as much. And so right now the Lions are in that paying three guys. We've got two aging veterans, but they're going to need, it's not a sustainable, you can't just keep paying these you're not going to be able to keep these over, these underpaid veterans for too long. Cause they keep aging. Right. And right. So you're going to have to, at some point, invest in youth that you can develop to start. With both Glasgow and Zettler on the roster, you have to draft a guy now that you think can start next year, right? Or maybe start this year because you need injury insurance as well. Mm-hmm. So they have to invest into a guard now. If they don't, your sustainability on the offensive line is going to be compromised. And like all of these teams do that. It's not just about like spending money. Right. Like it's not just let's throw money at it. It's the way that these offensive lines have been built successfully for a long time is that when a guy does leave in free agency, they basically are taking a guy that they've been developing and they just promote that guy instead of spending in free agency. When you look at a team like the Jets, who spent like the 10th most on their offensive line, yet graded out as the 31st offensive line, it's because they just spent in free agency as opposed to like developing and then promoting, right? And so these top offensive lines, if you want to stay, you have to invest in a guy that you think can start next year. And maybe that's why they drafted Colby, because they're like, hey, 2 years in the system, Colby's ready to go in year three. And they feel confident about that. At the same time, I don't know. Can you count on that extra year of development, getting him ready to start? Maybe, but maybe not. And if maybe not, then you got to add a guy that you feel comfortable as insurance right now and capable of taking on a starting role a year from now. And then you can keep that. And then you maybe have to repeat this process a year from now too. And that's how you keep the offensive line sustainable. You draft high, develop and replace your veterans with the younger guys when they're still on their rookie deals.
All right. Let's flip over to the defensive side of the ball, where another big free agency pickup occurred in the defensive tackle room. That's DJ Reader. DJ Reader's new ever since our last podcast, but he was the first big free agency. Was he the first big free agency?
Yeah. I mean, I would say,
stone to tumble.
Yeah. I would say he's bigger than the other guys that they added in free agency. Now they traded for Carlton. That's a big one.
Yeah. So that wasn't a free. Yeah.
But
all right,
yeah.
Lee McNeil. Khalid McNeil, Levi Onwuzurike, Broderick Martin, Chris Smith, all still on the roster. Slip in DJ Reader right along with them.
Yeah, I think this is arguably the best move they made in free agency. The Zeitler move is I think going to pay off the way that's going to pay off well. But Reader is a guy I think is going to have the bigger impact because he's a leader. He is exactly what they want next to Aleem. He doesn't get moved in the run game. He has a little bit of pass rush that he can generate. He commands double teams. So now it's going to be really tough to double team the interior. And if you're focused on double teaming the interior, because you've got these two 300 and 30-pound, 40-pound guys.
Now we're talking.
Now you're talking. Yeah. And now you're going to have a hard time doubling Hutch. And so Reader is a massive addition and exactly what they want in order to get Aleem into that three technique spot. DJ Reader is also exactly the type of guy that they want to develop Broderick Martin. And if Martin is on that 3-year plan as well, where you're hoping he can be a starter in year three or four, Reader's the guy that's going to help him get there. And I think maybe they realized Broderick was probably more on the year four path than year three, which is why they signed Reader to a multi-year deal with a lot of guarantees in the first two, is because they expect him to be around for a couple of years before maybe Martin's ready. Martin can be a contributor, and I think he's going to have some growth from DJ Reader because they're stylistically similar. They from a power standpoint, they're similar. From I've got a little bit of juice on my pass rush, they're similar. Broderick's just bigger, which is like even kind of scarier because DJ Reader is a massive man. But right. Reader, I mean, look, he's a veteran. You have an injury history that you need to be a little bit worried about, which is why you hope, that Martin can move along in his development quick. But Reader is exactly what they want. He is going to impact Broderick in development. He's going to impact Aleem and allow Aleem to get free more. And he's going to impact the edge guys too because of the double team commands that he has. So this is a massive trickle down effect that player that you're going to add. And while Zettler's great, you're not going to see that. Like, Zettler's, he's got two all pros next on either side of him. You're not going to see a ripple effect, right? By adding Zettler, you're sustaining an already good offensive line. With Reader, you are upgrading that defensive interior and you're going to see everyone else around him get better because of his presence. So that's why I think Reader is arguably the best, free agent addition they've had, just because he's going to make so many other people better. And again, if you're getting better defensive line play, it makes things easier on your linebackers to run fit. It makes things easier on your secondary to have in their coverage. And so this is a massive, massive addition that and the type of player that is exactly what you want.
Only concern with Reader is his injury history, right? Well, he's missed a couple of games over the last few years. Also, not a big pass rusher, obviously, as you pointed out, big run defender, run stopper. Did they necessarily, it would have been great if they got a guy who was a great run stopper and a great pass rusher, but those tend to cost you a lot more. And they tend not to make it to free agency. I don't know if there was really, besides Chris Jones, who stayed in Kansas City as it was, there really isn't another guy like that. I thought DJ Reader move was a very nice move. That defensive line's solidifying. Hopefully everybody can remain healthy. You got a couple of question marks in the middle there. But that was a good move.
Yeah, look, and he's scheme flexible too. So that if they want to start, continuing to adapt and switching between your one gap and two gap or your gap and a half, he can do all of that. There's no limits to the type of fronts that he can operate out of. He can play straight over the middle. He can play adjacent at the one. He can even kick out to the three at times, and you can run dual threes, which they did a little bit last year, especially near the end of the season. But his positional flexibility, his scheme flexibility, perfect. He's a perfect add for what they want to do.
All right. edge rushers, defensive ends. Of course, Aiden Hutchinson, John Kaminsky, Josh Pascal, they're all back. James Houston has an exclusive rights tender offered to him. Matthew Betts, the CFL sack master. Mitchell Agudé, those are all guys that are currently on the roster. Big free agent pickup, Marcus Davenport from, once again, New Orleans.
Yeah, and he was in Minnesota last year, and boy, do they hate him.
They knew him from, but originally, they know him from,
Yeah, originally drafted by the New Orleans Saints, 14th overall, lots of length, lots of power. In my opinion, he's your Romeo replacement. Romeo, who announced his retirement a couple days ago, last week. Jeez, was it last week? Yeah, last week.
Yeah, it was during the week.
I was at my daughter's, she had a concert that she was in, and he announced it right in the middle of that, so that was fun.
He got up during your daughter's concert and announced it right in front of everybody.
Well, he announced on social media, and then my phone, I was videoing my daughter, and my phone just started like going bananas while I'm trying to video this precious moment.
And you'll be watching this precious moment like a dozen years from now, and then you'll see the camera starts, the phone starts shaking.
Shaking.
I remember that. That's when Romeo Aguirre announced his retirement. I couldn't tell you how old you were, in the video, but I know that's when Romeo Aguirre retired.
It's probably accurate, but yeah. So Davenport is. Let's start about his impact first, then we'll talk about his contract second. But his impact is, he's going to be a situational pass rusher, in my opinion. I don't think he's going to start. It's possible that they try and get him in a starting type role in those situations when you don't want to go with like your kind of bigger defensive ends, like your Pascals and your Kaminsky. So you may see Davenport like technically as a starter, but if he plays more than like 40% of snaps, I'd be a little surprised, because that's typically what you've seen from him over his career. Tends to be a guy who gets around like 25 snaps a game, which is typically in that like 40% range. The Vikings had big aspirations for him when he was healthy on their games. He was only healthy for four of them, but the two games that he played the full complement of snaps, he was playing like 50 snaps, which is like double his average. And maybe that's why he got hurt. Who knows? Right. But like, they had big aspirations for him, which is why they overpaid for him. And I don't think he's going to have that level of responsibility in Detroit. There are going to be times when you're going to put him opposite Aiden. There's also going to be times when maybe he's backing Aiden up because they want to keep with their, Kaminsky and Pascal edge side. There's going to be times when maybe you see him line up outside of Kaminsky and Pascal, like kind of like that Sam position. I think there's some flexibility. But in my opinion, I don't think that they're looking at him and saying, this is a guy we're expecting to start and give us, 40, 50 snaps a game. It doesn't align with the contract they gave him, and it doesn't align with his history, even though that's what Minnesota tried to do with him, right? Minnesota had just, I think, completely misread how to use him. So in my opinion, he's going to be part of the rotation, and sometimes he's going to rotate with Aiden, and sometimes he's going to work with the other side, and sometimes he's going to supplement the other side. It's like, there's a lot of things that he can do, and that's part of his range. He can kick inside a three technique at time, which is interesting as well. He can give you some power on pass rushing, like when they go to like those NASCAR sets. So there's a lot to like with his potential, but they didn't really invest a ton in him. And I think, one, he's got an injury history, right? And that's part of it. But two, I think they looked at him and said, I don't know how big of a role he's going to have, and so I don't want to put a ton of money into him. In total, they're investing less than $5 million in him, okay? And I know the numbers that came out were like 1 year, 6.5. He can make up to $10 million. It's not like that. The deal that they made with him, they used a very obscure rule that they actually used last year as well, but it's not a very commonly used rule that they formulated in order to basically give him the opportunity to make more money without you know, them compromising their position. So essentially what they did was this is a rule called the 50% rule. And what they did was they're paying him a contract that is above minimum. But when they apply the 50% rule to that contract, his base salary reverts to the minimum, and then the leftover salary shifts to a signing bonus. So that means that's money he gets right off the bat. All the other bonuses that they're giving him, game bonuses, workout bonuses, roster bonuses, all that other stuff, that all also in the 50% rule shifts to a signing bonus. So he gets that money up front, and he has the potential to increase like the game bonuses and stuff like that. He's got incentive-based bonuses, but all the bonuses that like are likely to be earned that fall into that likely to be earned category, they all go to a signing bonus. So they didn't actually give him like a traditional signing bonus. They basically said, we're going to give you this much in your base and these and all these different types of bonuses and no signing bonus. But then when we apply the 50% rule, all of these different things shift to the signing bonus category. So you get that money up front. But what it does is it drops the guarantees that they have to pay him, and it drops the cap hit that they have to pay him. So they're going to owe him $5 million in total, but $1 million of it gets kicked to next year. Their cap hit is only going to be $3.4 million. So like, it's an unusual rule, but when you have a guy with an injury history, it makes a lot of sense. Last year, they applied it to Vitae. And so if a guy who has an injury history gets injured, you're not on the hook for as much money. It's overly complicated, but it really is. But it reduces the cap hit. It pushes potential cap hit into the future. And then if he outperforms and he earns more, that goes to the future as well, as opposed to being on the Lions being on the hook for right now. So basically he has the opportunity to make more money. Lions have a lower cap hit. And if he outperforms it, he ends up getting rewarded and the Lions don't have to pay that until next year. But heck, if he's giving the team those markers, then that's worth the money that they're paying for him. And they just don't have to pay him until next year anyway. So it's an unusual rule. It's a complicated rule. But it's one that, when agreed upon, it can benefit both parties. And that's essentially what happened here. The fun fact here is that the Vikings gave him a $10 million deal last year, a one-year $10 million deal. Lions gave him a one-year, which is now closer to five, so they gave him half. And the Vikings, because of the way they organized his deal, the Vikings are actually paying him or have a cap hit for Davenport of $6.8 million. The Lions have a cap hit for Davenport of $3.4 million, and he's actually playing on the Lions this year, not playing on the Vikings. So the Vikings are paying double to not have him play than what the Lions are paying. So there's a lot of cap gymnastics added going bonus on here. But yes, the added bonus is your rival, who didn't understand how to use him, is paying double the price that you are for a guy that you're hoping you can get some, you know, situational work out of.
When you get down to it, it's Hutchinson's going to play the vast majority of the snaps at one of the defensive end positions or anywhere on the field, right? He of the 11 players on defense, he's going to chew up a lot of snaps for one of those players. Yep. Kaminsky, Pascal, Houston, Davenport. Those four are going to be in the mix for all the other snaps, probably, you know, like,
yep.
1.2 players worth of snaps is going to end up going to those four guys.
And don't be surprised if this is a position they could consider in the top 100 picks of the draft as well.
Well, that's interesting that you brought that up, because that's where I was going with it. Like, you know, we don't hear a lot about that, them going after a pass rusher, but man, it would make some sense if that ended up happening.
And I could see them going after like a pure edge early. I could also see them trying to add a situational Sam later, and like on day three, right? There's a few of those guys out there in this draft that are appealing. And so adding a guy to compete with James Houston, I think, is within the realm of possibility.
Linebacker group, not much movement here. Derek Barnes, Alex Anzalone, Jack Campbell, Malcolm Rodriguez, Jalen Reeves-Maben signed a contract. I believe he signed the contract even before before our last episode aired, so I think we were already talking about him being on the team. I could be wrong. But those are the linebackers. Those are the same linebackers as last year. Anthony Pittman, gone, retired, right?
He didn't.
Yeah, he went to Washington. Yeah, he's a commander now, so... We've got five linebackers. I don't know if they probably will sign somebody, whether they'll draft somebody or sign somebody rolling up towards training camp. They're going to add someone, but it's pretty solid right now.
Yeah. They employ six pretty much every game day because of special teams purposes. Now, if you consider James Houston a linebacker, maybe he's it. Maybe that's your six, right? And it's very possible because of that Sam role that he can fill it. But they typically want six linebackers that can play and contribute on special teams and off the ball. So James Houston, big opportunity. So like if they do draft a guy on the edge, I don't think that automatically rules James Houston out, right? It's not like it's like, oh, James Houston's the low guy on the list and or I don't think it rules Kaminsky out or anything. I think there's some flexibility here in how they approach. So, yes, they use six off-the-ball linebackers every game for the last 3 years. But the way that they have some of these edge rushers that fit that linebacker mold, I think there's an opportunity that maybe they can add a little bit more of those or another one of those edge linebacker hybrid types of guys like that can fit the Sam role. And James Houston seems to be the one that sticks out like a sore thumb. So they may not replace Pittman as in an off the ball spot. They may look at James and say, hey, we're already all set with that special team spot. So we'll see how it goes. Not a pressing need at all. They haven't really needed to address it. Jalen got a 2-year deal, very deserving. Reeves also got, if we didn't talk about him last time, he also was named president of the NFLPA, right? Like the, right. So like big, couple of really big,
deal
moments for Reeves Maben this offseason. I mean, from all pro to and Pro Bowl nominations to, NFLPA on president, taking on that role. To getting a 2-year re-sign deal. Like a lot of good things happen for Reeves Maben this offseason. You got to be very happy for him.
All right. Cornerback position. This is a whole lot different than our last program back on March 9th, 2 weeks ago. Mm. Guys under contract right now include Craig James, Stephen Gilmore, Khalil Dorsey, Emmanuel Mosley, Brian Branch, Amik Robertson, Carlton Davis. Now, there's a name missing off that list from the last few days.
Yeah,
but big movement when it comes to corners.
So let's talk about Cameron Sutton first.
Yeah,
and then we'll talk about the Davis trade, and then we'll talk about Amik, and then we'll see where we go from there. But let's start with Cam. Cam was a starter last year. Signed a 3-year deal. Was. 3-year deal, $33 million, and had a very low cap hit, and still had $19 million in guarantees remaining. He has a altercation or alleged altercation, I should say, with a unnamed female in Florida, right around the same time that he's having a custody battle with a maybe the same, maybe not the same, another also taking place in Florida, maybe the same party. We're not clear because they're not releasing names on this as they should. They should not do that. But Sutton is accused of domestic violence with strangulation, which comes with it's a no bond felony. And there was enough evidence at the scene that they issued a warrant for his arrest on the spot immediately that day. They tried to track him down and they have been unable to track him down for almost 2 weeks at which point they took to social media and asked if anyone has seen this guy. Since they released that on social media, the Lions gave it a 24-hour, you know, investigation. I think, you know, where I assume they tried to get a hold of him.
Track him down. Get one of the teammates to track him down.
I have no idea if anybody was able to get a hold of him or not. I don't know that. What we do know is that less than or just over 24 hours after the Lions were informed about this incident, the Lions cut him. Now, there's a lot of people out there saying, boy, the Lions probably knew on March 7th, right? Because that's when the bond was issued or the arrest warrant was issued. And, you know, the Lions surely knew about this, whereas the Lions are saying they found out at the same time everyone else did. I tend to side with the Lions here, and I tell you why. 3 days prior to us finding out about his arrest warrant, he had a part of his contract that became guaranteed. $1.5 million of his contract became guaranteed, more than what had been previously guaranteed. If they knew about an arrest warrant out for him, they would have cut him before that kicked in, because that's right. Like, and that happened on the 16th. So to say the Lions knew about it on the 7th, I think is speculative. They wouldn't have just let a $1.5 million in guarantees like just occur because of, you know, because they didn't know, or they're, you know, or because they just weren't worried about, like, if you look at the inaction with his contract and with his status, it tells me they probably didn't find out till after that fact. So did they find out after the 16th, but before the 20th or whatever, or the 18th or whatever it is? Maybe, who knows? I don't know, but I don't know exactly when. They say they found out same time everyone else, then maybe that's true. It's regardless.
We'll never know.
Yeah, regardless,
he's gone.
Yes. So they do their investigation, they release him. We still don't know if he's guilty. We still don't know if he did it. And the reason we don't know is because he has not turned himself in. Yeah, he's in the wind, which looks very bad. Now, other people have said, boy, it does seem out of character for him. And the fact that nobody has seen him for over 2 weeks now, is this a missing persons case? Which I completely understand that thought process. The police have said, though, that his license plate has shown up on there. You know, it's been flagged, and they don't believe it's a missing persons case. Now, could someone have been driving his car? Certainly. But they say that there's enough evidence that they don't believe it's a missing persons case. It's a arrest warrant case at this time. I don't know what the police have done. I don't know if they're like tracking different parts. We don't know any of that right now. Again, and so it's all speculative, and I don't want to speculate on what they are or are not doing. I can just tell you that at this time, the police are saying it is not a missing persons case. So if it's not a missing persons case and the Lions looked into it and the Lions released him, it certainly looks bad. Hopefully there's nothing, you know, that's happened to him or anyone else. And hopefully people are all safe. All parties are safe. Like, right. But we don't know. All we know is that there was an incident, alleged incident, that resulted in an arrest warrant. They have not been able to contact him. The Lions investigated and ended up releasing him, and he is no longer on the team, and he has still not contacted or turned himself in, and the arrest warrant is still active. So that's what we know. From a team standpoint, you've now lost a starter. I know there's a lot of people that are going to – there's been a lot of jokes out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of joking. A
lot of jokes out there about, like, how he wasn't that good anyways, but okay, but whatever. From a team standpoint, though, you had a guy who you thought was going to start that's no longer on the roster, so that you have to have a plan to replace that spot. And from a cap standpoint, there's another big process that happens as well. Now, again, This is a little, this is kind of complicated, not as complicated as like Davenport's deal, but because he still had 19 million left in guarantees, from a league standpoint and from how the cap is designed, the Lions are on the hook for that. And because they cut him, all of those guarantees come due immediately. But there's an option. There was an option for the Lions called the June 1st rule, which allows the Lions to spread that cap hit out over two seasons so that they don't have to incur the entire $19 million hit now. And essentially what that does is that takes his base salary, which is around $12.5 million, his previous cap hit, which was around $12.5 million, and that sticks on the roster this year. And the remainder, the like, you know, $7 million or whatever it is, gets kicked to next year, the 6.5 that's left over, 6.8. So that money gets kicked down the road because that was guaranteed beyond this year so that they can kick the next year. But because his release was a potential violation of conduct, because there's an arrest warrant, the Lions have petitioned the league to void part of his guaranteed contract. Okay. Now, to be clear, the part that the base salary that's been guaranteed is $10.5 million. That's what they're petitioning the league to void. That's not money they were going to pay to Cam. Like that, it's not like he's going to get that money. That was just money he was supposed to get paid. But because of the way the contracts are, the Lions are on the hook for that from a league standpoint. So the Lions are saying to the league, hey, he's in breach of contract. He violated the league code of conduct. We shouldn't be held accountable for that 10.5. And the league will most certainly rule in the Lions' favor at some point, and the Lions will be credited that $10 million in cap space. That hasn't happened yet, but that process is occurring now. So right now the Lions have a $12.5 million cap hit for Sutton, and because they released him. That is in the works. They're probably going to get it back, and they're probably going to end up with a $2.5 million cap hit this year, and then the 6 point whatever next year. The reason they still will have that on the books is because that was part of his signing bonus. The signing bonus has already been paid. The signing bonuses get paid when the deal happens. So because the Lions have already been paid that out, they're on the hook for that. And they're on the hook from a cap standpoint for that, as far as the league is concerned. So they're going to incur a cap hit of 2 point whatever this year, and then 6 point whatever next year. The Lions can attempt to get that money back from Sutton, but there's a process that has to happen. And the first part of the first domino that has to fall is he has to be arrested, tried, and convicted in order for it to be a legal breach of contract. Then the Lions can sue him to try and get that money back in order to try and get compensation. This process is going to take a long time, right? The legal courts move slow. The civil court to sue him to get the money back is going to run slow. So you've got to wait for the criminal process to play out. Then you've got to go through a civil process to try and get that money back. So that money in the Lions' mind, they have to look at that money as it's gone. And if they get it back, it's a bonus, but that money's gone. That is the price you pay for signing a guy in free agency with a big signing bonus. They're probably going to get it back. Like I said, the base salary and the cap hit, they have a chance to get the signing bonus back from him if they sue him, especially if he's guilty and is found guilty. But this is a long process, and it's a long, complicated process in order to fix all the money. At the end of the day, the Lions are probably going to have a small cap hit, and they're probably going to get all the 10 point whatever cap hit that they're sitting on now. They're probably going to get that all back this year that they can use for salary cap purposes. But for now, they're going through the process. And so It's a really crappy situation for everybody. It's a crappy situation for the victim. It's a crappy situation for the alleged victim, for the alleged, for Cam to be alleged of this. Hopefully he didn't do it. If he did, then he's going to, you know, have to hopefully he'll pay the price for it. Right. Like, we'll see how it all plays out. But Lions, the Lions football stuff is all secondary, right? But we have to talk about it because that's what this is. That's what we do. We're talking about how it impacts the team.
Yeah, the Lions. This is the Lions podcast.
Right. So we'll see how things unfold over the next few months from a Lions standpoint. I fully expect them to get their money back and get cap relief. That's in the league's hands. And at this point, the Lions have decided to move on, right? And so from a financial standpoint, it's really not going to be that big of a hindrance, okay? Because they don't incur a bigger penalty. They're just paying the same amount that they were, right? So they were anticipating paying, you know, his cap hit. They're still paying his cap hit. Hopefully they get relief down the road. And so it's not going to change their plans, right? Like, it's not like because they cut him, oh no, we have to now, we don't have the money to spend in free agency. No, they have the same amount. They have the same amount that they can spend no matter what. They're still going to be in fine shape. But they're probably, and again, they're probably going to get cap relief down the road. So the big thing for them is that they're going to have, are they comfortable with the cornerbacks on their roster or do they need to add more? That's going to be the biggest thing from a Lions perspective. And the odds are they're probably going to need to add more to the position. We just talked about the, you know, spending. They have the money to spend if they want to go add a guy like, you know, Stephon Gilmore, right? Or they could spend a draft pick. They have money to do that too. So they have the money to add a player, and they probably will, and they have some options on how to do it. In the interim, they added two guys that are probably penciled into starting roles right now. So let's talk about them, and I'll take a breath and try and, you know.
Well, the first one's Carlton Davis. He comes from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where he's been a 6-year starter. You know, he's a somewhat durable. He's missed several games over the last few years. So actually, I should say he's not really super durable. he was coming. They brought him in to basically be cornerback one, pushing Correct. Sutton to the cornerback two role. So his role is really not changing after all this, but
Correct.
There's going to be a little more pressure on him in all likelihood, unless the Lions, as you point out, the Lions make another move. What do you think about Davis? He's an, you know, he's starter on a Super Bowl defense, but
yeah,
he's getting older and Lions beat that team in the playoffs, you know, and he got, He got a crunching block thrown on him by Craig Reynolds in the regular season. You know,
That's true.
That's what Lions fans know him as.
So Tampa runs a ton of zone and he's a man corner. And so he's never really been a perfect fit for them in their scheme. When they did shift a man, he would more often than not thrive in their man schemes as opposed to their zone. Coming to the Lions, they started the shift back to man at the end of the year, and it makes sense that they would stick with man because that's really what Aaron Glenn wants to do. And so I fully expect them to use him in man more often. I expect him to be more successful because the scheme, I think, will suit his situation better and his skill set better. He is highly confident. He has said that they brought him in to be CB1, and he believes he can be CB1. In that Super Bowl team, he was absolutely a shutdown corner on that team that went to the Super Bowl. Since then, the injuries have limited him. The scheme kind of has limited him as well. And so there's been a bit of a regression in his play. And I think that injuries, regression, that the little bit of a regression for the Bucs scheme, plus him being in a contract year, left him vulnerable on their roster. Well, for the Lions, though, it's an upgrade, and they have a scheme that they believe fits him better, and they look at injuries as, you know, something that players can recover from, and so they seem to be a lot more confident that he will be able to be a CB1, stay at CB1, and can act as that moving forward for them. So I think it's a good fit. It's a good marriage. You know, I don't like giving up top 100 picks, and they gave up pick 90, whatever it was, 96 or whatever, or 92 to get him. I wasn't a fan of that. That's what it cost. But at the same time, I understand if they obviously look, they were not going to give up a third round pick if they don't believe he's a CB1. Like, that's just right. The way it is, right? Like, that's their mindset, is that he's a starter. So it's better to have a veteran. It's better to trade for, you know, a guy who you think is going to hit the ground running, as opposed to a guy that you're going to have to develop. And for a team that's on the Super, you know, in that Super Bowl window, I completely understand the move and the price tag for what it costs. I don't like giving up that much, but at the same time, I understand why they did it.
Interesting. L'Jarius Sneed, the trade package for L'Jarius Sneed, right? There's a lot of talk about the Lions getting him. Now he would have been a lot more costly than Carlton Davis if they would have made the trade for him. Instead, Chiefs are going to get a third round pick and a seventh round pick flop.
Yeah.
But it's a big outlay for Sneed.
Yeah, he's going to cost like 19 per, whereas Davis came in with a $14 million price tag, and they restructured it to knock it down to 9.8. So you're paying half in cap hit, right? So the price tag to acquire was about the same. And, you know, actually Lions got a couple more picks. So, you know, you could argue it's 6-1. It's close to the same. But the price tag is way different. And I think that was part of the process.
Yeah, but Sneed is a better player. Interesting how it all worked out. Maybe the Kansas City dumping him off on Tennessee, they certainly would look at the trade as like, well, we're not going to deal with them again. Whereas if you traded him to the Lions, they might be thinking there might be a revenge game in the Super Bowl for L'Jarius Sneed if he ended up with those. So who knows how far it even got as a trade for Sneed, if anything. All right. The other free agent pickup, well, just Carlton Davis wasn't a free agent pickup, but Amik Robertson coming over from the Las Vegas Raiders. He's emerging. You know, he was a starter last year, but he's kind of built it like he's going to be a starter in his fourth year type deal.
Yeah, he is the exact same size as Aaron Glenn. And so if anyone understands how to use a 5'9", 188-pound corner, it's going to be Aaron Glenn. And I think right now he's penciled into that starting role. Will he stick in that starting role? I think that's up for debate. If Emmanuel Mosley comes back, I think Emmanuel Mosley has a more proven track record and could potentially win a starting role. I also think if they add a player, especially early, that player could compete for a starting role as well. So I don't think Robertson's locked in, but at the same time, he gives you some security, right? Because Mosley's coming off an injury, so you don't know. You also don't have that corner on the roster yet, so you don't know if you're going to get the opportunity to add a corner. And so Robertson is a guy who is a very nice add to keep you in a position where you feel comfortable throwing him out there as a starter. You also signed him for 2 years for a reason, right? Like, they didn't just invest. It's not just like a 1 year like flyer deal that they gave him. They've invested in 2 years with more guarantees carrying over into year two. And they did that because they have confidence in him. And if you watch him play, the swagger is like, it's just exuding out of his body. He's got a ton of swagger. He's got a nose for the football. When he was in college, he led the NCAA in interceptions. He averages two interceptions a year as a part-timer with the Raiders. And he steps up in key moments and he plays big. He's one of these guys where if you, he's going to talk a lot of smack. And if you smack talk him back and you insult him, it motivates him to play even harder. And there's a great sequence of clips from, I think it was Denver, where the Denver game, I think, where he was covering Jerry Jeudy, who caught a pass on him and then gave like a little, like, you're too short symbol. And Amik then basically like shut him down the rest of the game and even had a fumble recovery for a touchdown. And he basically said after the game, like, that was he, you know, he took a shot at him and that motivated him to do better. And I think there was another incident like where you saw that happen as well with the Chargers traded him to the Bears.
Keenan Allen,
where Keenan Allen said something to him, and then that like ticked him off, and he became highly motivated and had a great performance against Keenan Allen as well in that game. And so he seems to be a guy that does not like to be disrespected. He's got a lot of grit, got a lot of swagger, got a lot of confidence, and he's got tremendous ball skills. You will very often see him turn and look for the ball and then make plays on that ball. And he's a good man. And he's, like I said, there's some position flexibility to him as well because of his size. He's got some experience kicking inside as more of a true corner. And so there's a lot to like. This is a guy that people are going to look at and say, oh, he's 5'9". He's, you know, and dismiss him pretty quickly. And then when he gets into camp, people are going to see him and he's going to quickly become a fan favorite. He's going to play in the preseason and people are going to look at him and they're going to be like, oh my God, you know, and I'm excited to see him play. Is he going to be a starter? It's to be determined, but right now he's penciled in as a starter in my book.
You look at his advanced stats, he has gotten better over the years. The completion percentage he gives up has been going down. It's under 60%. You know, the opposing quarterback rating when throwing in his direction has dropped below 90. It's down to 87.4, which is pretty good. He's not definitely not a shutdown corner. They're not paying him like one. He doesn't have the track record of one, of course. But the numbers show that he's not a bad player. So that's an interesting pickup by the Lions. We'll see what his volume in all likelihood is going to go up because he's probably going to play a little bit more than he did for the Raiders. Maybe not. Maybe it'll be about the same. And if he keeps on that track, that would probably be a pretty good addition, quiet addition, but it's one that looks like it could work out pretty well for the Lions. Jerry Jacobs, Will Harris, Kendall Vildor. I know we probably shouldn't speak of Vildor's name again on the show.
Well, I think honestly,
does he come back? Those guys are all still out there. Do they bring one of them back? Do they bring two of them back?
If they bring one back, I think Vildor is the one they bring back. I think Jerry has run his course here. It sure seems the way he's insinuating on social media is that his time here is done. The team really likes Will Harris's versatility, but when you look at Will Harris's usage, it basically like fell off a cliff. Like they were like, hey, we got this guy, we're going to use him, and they were using him early in the season, and then they kind of stopped, and they only used him when they needed to. And the fact that they haven't re-signed him to an affordable deal, I could be writing on the wall. We'll see. I still think there's a chance, but if I had to put money on one of these guys coming back, I'd put my money on Vildor.
All right. Safeties. Kirby Joseph, Ife Melifonwu, Brandon Joseph. Those are the three guys under contracts. Nothing has changed in the last couple of weeks. Joseph and Melifonwu very likely the starters going into the regular season. This seems to be an area that they will need to add. Obviously, they're not going to go into training camp with only three players on the roster. But you know, how do they add? Are they going to look for a veteran in free agency as more cuts happen as we go along? Are they going to look to draft somebody? Obviously, we don't know, but what are the possible moves?
Yeah, there's been a ton of cuts, right, in the NFL. And with all of those cuts, you've seen really minimal movement in the market, right? Like, I've actually been kind of surprised how many safeties are still sitting out there. Now, CJGJ, he went back to Philly, which is kind of insane. but they felt like, they felt like he was, they missed his swagger last year, is I guess the way they put it. Like, and they offered him a multi-year deal, which is what he wanted. And so he returns to Philly after the fan base completely screamed at him for a full year and told him what a piece of garbage he was. And he yelled back and it was a disaster. And now he's coming back and everybody's going to be happy, apparently. But look, Justin Simmons is a Pro Bowl safety who no one has looked at. Quandre Diggs is just sitting there. Like, and if you look at Quandre Diggs' timeline, all he does is tweet about Detroit. Like, that's almost all he does. Like, he's tweeting about Oakland basketball, OU basketball. Like,
right.
It seems so logical to bring Quandre back. And I'm sure Quandre is feeling out the market, and he absolutely should. But like Marcus May, Jamal Adams, Eddie Jackson, Micah Hyde, John Johnson, who another guy, there's familiar, Tayshaun Gibson.
A lot of experience out there.
They're all out there. And no one is like rushing to get them. We're now 2 weeks into free agency. The prices have to be dropping on these guys.
Right.
Because no one's making moves on them. And
well,
because
they know they can get one of the other guys. Like, well, we're not going to go so heavily after you because we can get one of these other guys.
It's almost like a running back type market, right? Where it's like even some of the better guys are just getting like kind of glossed over, or how the running back, I guess, was viewed a few years ago. It's not a great safety class. It's not like there's a whole bunch of like rookies that are sitting out there that are, you know, are just waiting.
Appetizing. Yep.
Right. And so like for me, the Lions have the money to go get one of these veterans. And with both Iffy and Kirby still being relatively young, Iffy having a history and only being a starter for half the season, I absolutely think they have to get a veteran's safety. And if I were Brad Holmes, that'd be one of the moves I'd be looking to make soon, because there's talent. And I think once you get one of them, one of these veterans signed, you may see a bit of a run on them once the price kind of gets set. But the price hasn't been set on these guys yet. And there's a bunch of really good guys that are out there who are capable of starting that you could bring in like a safety three role that can, you know, Quandre is perfect because he can play multiple spots. He gives you that veteran leadership. He loves to see, like, Quandre makes a ton of sense. He's a guy who can spot start, but he's also old enough where you can justify not starting it. Like, it makes a ton of sense to add Quandre. Justin Simmons. How is Justin Simmons still available? It doesn't make any sense to me. Like, and so if I'm the Lions, I'm trying to get an established veteran that can spot start at safety, help develop my younger safeties, and be capable of contributing. If you get another safety in the draft, great. You can add depth, develop. You get another one that you can work on. I'm totally on board with that too. But I think you have to add a veteran. Like, you've got two guys. Brandon Joseph was a UDFA who spent the year on the practice squad. He's not a guy I'm counting on. And you're going to want at least three, probably four safeties on your roster, which means you need to add two, which means you got to add a veteran at some point. And why not add one of the better ones now, right? So
right.
That's where I'm at.
We're trying to win a title here.
Yeah.
Exactly. Go for the gusto.
Exactly. And they're not going to cost a ton, especially now at this stage in free agency. Prices should be coming pretty cheap now.
All right. Last but certainly not least, special teams, Jack Fox under contract, Michael Badgley under contract, Scott Daly under contract, Jake McQuaid is still out there. I don't know. Yeah. They'll be probably bringing another long snapper for competition because that seems to be the thing they do.
Right.
So something's going to happen there, but probably not much moving here. They'll add a kicker going into training camp, right? They'll have a pair of kickers. Maybe they'll add another punter just to see, you know, just to have them in training camp.
I don't think they need a punter. I think they'll.
Well, no, but I mean, they're going to have a third kicker of some sort, whether it's.
Oh, yeah. They absolutely need another kicker. And they've alluded to the fact that they want to bring in another long snapper too. So, will it be McQuaid? Maybe if they don't land a UDFA long snapper that they want, they might bring McQuaid back, you know, right. but McQuaid. Okay. So McQuaid's a former Pro Bowler who played in LA, but his family's from Ohio. And so he wants to play locally. He wants to be close to his family. So unless he's signing with the Bengals or the Browns,
or the
you know,
Colts.
Colts aren't that far.
It's not too
but
far
like
away.
He essentially went
or
to
the
Detroit.
Steelers.
Yeah, it's getting a little further, but yeah. But he basically, I mean, look, he basically
depending on
went,
what part of Ohio he's from, I'm looking this
right.
up.
He basically went to the Lions and said, "Hey, would you consider me?" Like he went to them and said, "I want to be close to my family. Would you consider me for the position?" It wasn't like the Lions were actively looking for him. It was the other way around. He basically showed up and was like, "Hey, I know Brad Holmes from our time in LA. Here's my resume." And they liked what they saw, right? And so I think I can't imagine his situation has changed. I mean, maybe it has, but I can't imagine. So I kind of think he's in contention. He's interested in a couple different teams, and that's probably it.
He's from Cincinnati, so that
there
puts
you go.
Pittsburgh and Detroit probably roughly the same distance. So let's see, if we're driving 4 hours, 18 minutes from Cincinnati to Pittsburgh. Sorry, this is not podcast. This
but
is not
maybe
really
his
necessary. Nobody
maybe,
cares about this.
maybe his family's
Same
moved
4 hours,
to Toledo.
15 minutes to Detroit. Well, it could be. Well, it
Yeah.
said he's from Cincinnati. Not that he played
That's
at
true.
Cincinnati, but that he's from Cincinnati.
Right. And I
so
know his
Cleveland's
family.
closer. Indianapolis is closer. And then
there you go.
Tennessee, you know, the Titans are in Nashville. So that's probably a little bit longer, but he's got a couple options there. He's not stuck with the Lions.
No, I don't think he's stuck, but I think there's a preference there.
Yeah, he went to Ohio State. He went to Elder. That's the high school. Cincinnati Elder.
Oh, Elder. Okay.
All right. Nah, that's it. All right. Reviews. We had a couple of reviews. Got a boost in
nice.
On Apple Podcasts. One was a re-review. Doug the Lion chimed back in, gave us a nice updated review. He does have a theory, if you want me to read, based on, all right, so
sure.
All right, we'll get back to Doug the Lion in the second. The other one's from Shade 54. Short review, very good one. Enjoys listening to the podcast, a lot of good information. So Doug the Lion, he says, based on recent history with giving defensive linemen contracts and extensions, I'm absolutely against giving any more defensive linemen contracts and extensions unless his name is Hutch. Here's why. Brocker's given a contract, result, he disappears. Romeo given a 2-year contract extension, he disappears. Harris, that's Charles Harris, given a contract extension, disappears. Bugs given a contract, disappears. Need I say more? Doug the Lion. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
So but that kind of folds into what you're saying about drafting edge rushers. Marcus Davenport, he was signed, but it's a 1-year deal. I don't know if that fits quite under
No, I
Doug's
think he
criteria,
means
because that's not an extension. Well, I think he just means contract extensions for players already on the roster.
Yeah. At the same time, they extended Kaminsky, so, and he's still sticking around, but maybe he dropped
We'll
off.
see how that turns
Maybe.
out. Here's our next case study.
We'll see.
Slight boost over on Spotify.
Nice.
But I don't know. I don't have anything else.
I think things are going to slow down, right? The owners' meetings are this weekend, so typically, what you see with the right around the owners' meetings is things taper off a little bit. There's still some moves, but they're not as significant. Like I said, I expect the prices to go down. As prices go down, you know, you're going to see more guys added. So the Lions, you know, they're not done, but at the same time, they've made some nice moves to put themselves into a good spot. They have 63 players under contract, right? So they still got 27 more spots open. 7 of those will go to draft picks. So that would bump them up to 70 if they used all their draft picks. So that leaves them 20 more spots in free agency. I'm sorry, in undrafted free agency, like that period after the draft, you typically see them sign anywhere from like 12 to 15 guys, right? So that means they probably got like 5 spots that if they wanted
spots.
To fill. Roughly. I've seen them go higher. You know, in the past, they've gone higher or lower. They could, but I would say they got about 5 to 10 spots that they could look around at and say, you know, hey, we want to add another safety. We want to add a receiver. We want to add you know, another corner in free agency. So like maybe we got to add a quarterback three, you know, just because we need it. We got to add us, you know, whatever. Right. So in my mind, you could see a few more moves, maybe five, maybe 10 at the most. And then there's going to be a bunch of free agents that'll come following the draft as well. So yeah, don't expect a ton of movement, but there's still a little bit of availability.
All right. That's it. That's all we got for this week. Who knows when we'll be back on next. Hopefully it'll be a little sooner than what we did here this last time. Eric's on vacation, so don't expect anything until the end of this week. That's for sure.
Ooh, I have not been on a vacation in a while. It's only going to be a few days, but it's family oriented and stuff, but it's been a while that I have not at least done something at a computer about the Lions, you know, for a couple of days. I haven't strung together a couple of days of non-work in a long time. So I'm going to take a little vacation next week. We'll be back and we'll try and record something as soon as we can.
Well-deserved vacation for Eric. That's all we got for this time around. So until next time, let's go Lions.